There's a famous scene after Jesus' resurrection in which he is on the road to Emmaus with a couple of followers who have no idea that it's Jesus as he's speaking to them. They have no idea that Jesus has been raised from the grave. They're just distraught and sad that the one that they thought was the Christ had died. And it's in that chapter of Luke 24 that Jesus, as he's on the road to Emmaus with them, Luke tells us, that beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. The million-dollar question is, what passages exactly did Jesus go to on that road to Emmaus? What all is he pulling from as he's talking to them and all the scriptures that point to him, the things concerning himself? We know that he drew from all the scriptures when he's talking to these two disciples. And I would like to imagine that, among other things, maybe one of the places that he went was the book of Joshua. Now, we don't always think of Joshua in those types of contexts. Usually we think of, obviously, Jesus would have gone to Isaiah 53, or he would have gone to other prophets, or he might have gone to Deuteronomy in the past, just talking about a prophet arising greater than Moses. But there's also similarities between Jesus and Joshua as well. First of all, some of you might know this already, Jesus and Joshua, they actually have the same name. Joshua is the name Yeshua. Joshua is our English version of that Hebrew name. Jesus is the Greek version of that name, Joshua or Yeshua. But it goes beyond just a similarity in them having the same name, Jesus and Joshua having the same name. Both Jesus and Joshua, obviously, both were leaders of their people. They were both conquerors of the enemies of God's people. And both Jesus and Joshua, they led their people into the promised land. And gave their people rest. Although Joshua and the rest that came, as the Hebrew writer talks about, it wasn't a permanent rest in the same sense that Jesus gives us rest in his leadership of us. Here in Joshua chapter 24, these are some of the most famous verses in the book of Joshua. Not some of the most famous verses. I think these are the most famous verses in the book of Joshua. It's Joshua 24, verses 14 and 15, we just read. Now, therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served in the region beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. The book of Joshua as a whole, in many ways, it's actually a surprisingly tough book. We might not recognize that, and if so, it's because we probably spend most of our time in the first half of the book of Joshua. Roughly the first dozen chapters of the book of Joshua, they deal with Joshua after the death of Moses, leading the Israelites into the promised land, into Canaan, and conquering the enemies of God and carving out their portion of the promised land. So Jericho, Ai, all of those battles and the stories that go with them, they all happen in those first dozen chapters in Joshua. But after those first dozen chapters of Joshua, that's where our eyes can glaze over, and that's where, if we're going to lose our footing or do a speed read, that's usually when it's going to happen. Because after those first dozen chapters of Joshua, now that they're in the land, Joshua spends the last half of that book allotting to each tribe their inheritance. And usually that'll take a chapter for each of those tribes, roughly. And so for us, figuring out all the dimensions and where the territory ends and begins, that's hard for us to contextualize or really find in some way that's applicable to us. But you can imagine for Israelites who they're coming into this land. They want to know the story of how they got this land, of the boundaries of their inheritance. You can imagine it's probably a little bit more exciting for them. But the book closes with this last final admonition of Joshua, because really this is the last time the Israelites are going to be so close together. They've been together as a people. All the tribes have come together to travel from Egypt all the way to Canaan. They've been together as they fought against their enemies. And now they have their inheritance. Naturally, this is how it was going to happen. They're going to split off and go to their respective places in the land. And Joshua is telling them, you have a choice to make. You have a choice to make. This is a new beginning, a new start. In a sense, these Israelites are a new people. Not just in a sense they become a new people after leaving Egypt, but this is a new generation. A previous generation had passed away because of their sin. And Joshua is saying, you have a choice. You can serve God, or you can serve the former gods, or the gods of the land here. In so many words, what Joshua is saying is, I am resolved to do the right thing. So this is going to be the topic of what we talk about this morning. I am resolved. It's very fitting because just in the same way that Israel had a new beginning, a new start in this new promised land. And Joshua is telling them, I'm resolved to follow the Lord. Are you resolved to follow the Lord as well? In the same way, we should always be asking ourselves this question. It doesn't really matter when. Throughout the year, but especially as we start into a new year, a fresh year, where we always, at least mentally, we know that in some sense, there's a blank slate that I now have to write a new story for this year, no matter how the previous year went. I have a new beginning here. We need to be able to say the same thing as Joshua, that I am resolved. So first of all, let's be able to say this. I am resolved to serve the Lord in sincerity and truth. Look at that first verse again, chapter 24 of Joshua, verse 14. Now, therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in truth. My Bible actually says sincerity and in faithfulness. Faithfulness, truth, obviously. It could go either way on there. I chose to put truth on there for a few reasons, but these two things. Also, I don't want to... I think it would be improper to drive too much of a wedge between these two words, sincerity and truth. Obviously, there's differences between those words, but there's also a lot of overlap between those words as well. Sincerity, to do something sincerely is to do it with your whole heart, to do something faithfully. To be sincere in something does mean to be truthful in how you do something. If you say sincerely yours, you really mean truthfully yours. I really feel this way. That's what being sincere is. But a lot of times I think when we hear sincere, and I think this is completely fair, a lot of times when we hear that word sincere, or when we are thinking about doing something sincerely, what we really think of is doing things with the right attitude. When we hear truth, or doing things in a true way, or doing things in a faithful way, to be faithful or true means to be loyal or means to be steady. But a lot of times what we also think of, I think, is we picture truth being doing things not just with the right attitude, but in the right way. In fact, John chapter 4, verse 23, Stuart even referenced this just before we began our song service. John 4, 23, it says a very similar thing. Joshua, Jesus, speaking to the woman at the well in Samaria. The hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such people to worship him. There's always a type of person that God has sought out to have follow him, people that worship him in sincerity and in truth, people that worship him in spirit and truth, in sincerity and faithfulness, people that not only worship with the right type of attitude, but in the right type of ways. And again, we can't really draw a wedge between those two words. Someone that wants to sincerely follow after God is going to worship him in the right ways or seek what is pleasing to God. And someone who wants to worship God faithfully and in truth, they're also going to be, that's an act of worshiping in a sincere way. We recognize when we come together as a church that there is something important when we come together as a church and we worship collectively, all together. But our service and worship, we can't stop there. It goes deeper than that. It goes deeper than just what we do on a collective basis. It goes deeper than what we do just on Sundays or on a midweek Bible study. In Romans chapter 12, verse 1, Paul, he says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, fully acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Now, this verse where Paul calls the Christians that he's writing to live as living sacrifices, to present their bodies as living sacrifices. Just the language in that very first verse. I think we can easily infer from that he's talking more than just about, well, one day out of the week or 2 days out of the week when you come together, make sure that you're doing things in a good way. Make sure that you're making sacrifices at that time. And he's talking about a daily way of living. And he's saying that this is your spiritual worship, or some translations, this is your spiritual service to the Lord. And through those next chapters in Romans, Romans 12, 13, 14, Paul over and over, he talks about things, ways in which Christians are supposed to engage and act, not just on a weekend basis, but on a daily basis, both among Christians, among family, and in the world as a whole. In other words, often again, and I think rightfully, we when we think of worship, we immediately think of what we do together as a church, the songs that we sing, the praise that we give, the prayers that we give. Paul's reminding us it goes deeper than that as well. It's important what we do with the 5% of the time of our week that we're together. But if we end up forgetting the other 95% of our lives, we're missing something drastic. And so for us, as we enter into a new year and we think of how am I going to be resolved to serve the Lord in sincerity and in truth? I imagine if we reflect on our lives, there's things that we recognize. Okay, I need to improve in these types of ways. Maybe I need to pray more, or maybe I need to study my Bible more. Or I need to share the gospel more, talk about Jesus more with friends that I have. And all of those are important. And really, the task for us, in order to improve on any of those things, the first thing that we have to do is choose something that we intend to improve. If we know that there are things that I want to improve, I want to get better at in this next year, well, choose something. Think about what those things are that would most benefit you in your life to improve upon, and choose something to work on and to make a habit of doing better. Once you choose something, be specific about how you're going to make improvements on that. It's no use saying I'm going to pray more this year and then never have any type of specific idea of really how that's going to work, or how you're going to be able to measure that, or reflect back on, did I end up praying more this week than I did the previous week? Did I really accomplish what I wanted to accomplish? Did I grow in what I wanted to grow? Be specific. If you want to pray more, say, okay, I'm going to pray at morning, noon, and in the evening. Or if I'm going to study my Bible, I'm going to read, be specific about it. How much are you going to study your Bible? I'm going to read a chapter a day, and I'm going to read the Bible in a year. Think about ways in which you can specifically improve. If you know you need to share the gospel more with friends, be specific about how you would say that I have improved in this. I'm going to talk to one friend each week about Jesus. I'm going to start a conversation. So choose something and then be specific about how you're going to improve in those types of ways. Something that you can look back on at the end of the day and say, okay, I accomplished what I had wanted to. And then once you choose something, once you're specific about what you want to improve, write it down. If you know that you need to improve in something and you don't write it down, it's pretty easy for you to, about a week or 2 or 3 weeks later, just forget what you had thought about in the first place. It's also easy for you to think that, well, I kind of thought that I was going to improve in this thing, but it wasn't that big of a deal to me then. You write it down and you have something in front of you that says, no, this was a big deal from the beginning. This is something that I wanted to hold myself accountable to. Putting it in writing helps us to remember that and reflect on that and to make sure that we're doing what we had demanded of ourselves. And finally, we're trying to improve ourselves. If we're serving the Lord in sincerity and truth and trying to grow, tell someone. After you've chosen something and been specific about what you wanted to improve, and once you've written it down that this is what I want to change and grow in, tell someone who is close to you, who can keep you accountable. Tell someone that this is what I'm trying to do this year, whether it's a spouse or whether it's a friend, whether it's a brother or sister. Tell someone so that they know, so that they can pray for you, so that they can also ask you, how is that going? And so it's not just, it's very easy when we're trying to change things in our life to try to do everything solo. And part of the reason that usually doesn't work is because we tend to let ourselves off the hook pretty easy. Whereas other people, even if they're not cruel or mean and not letting us off the hook, there's something, somebody there that we recognize that we need to be true to our word when we say that these are the things that I'm working on. So do those types of things as we recognize in our lives that there's ways that we want to serve the Lord in sincerity and in truth. And there's things that we recognize that every year, really every day, there are things that we need to improve on. We need to be able to say that I am resolved to serve the Lord in sincerity and in truth. Also, like Joshua, we need to be able to say that I am resolved to forsake the idols of yesterday and shun the idols of tomorrow. I am resolved to forsake the idols of yesterday and shun the idols of tomorrow. Look again in verse 14, after that first part that we just read, that second sentence. Joshua says, put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served in the region beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. Joshua, in so many words, he's saying you have a choice. You can serve those gods of former days, those gods that your father served beyond the river and in Egypt, or you can serve the gods of the land that you are now in, the land of the Amorites. This land of the Amorites, or the promised land, Canaan, we're actually familiar with these gods as the story of Israel goes on. These are the gods of tomorrow, the gods that they haven't really encountered a whole lot yet. Gods like Molech and Dagon and Baal, who's going to become Baal, you hear his name over and over, especially once you get in the books, 1st and 2nd Kings. These are gods that at least at one point in time, they wouldn't have been extremely familiar for Israel, but they're going to be gods that are going to be a real thorn in their side as it comes up. What's remarkable about this passage is he also gives us an indication of what had gone on previously in Israel's history. The book of Exodus doesn't tell us every single thing about Israel and what the Israelites were doing before Moses came. But there's verses like this scattered throughout the Old Testament that give us an indication of some of the things that had happened. He says, put away the gods that your father served beyond the river and in Egypt. In other words, idolatry was never a new thing with Israel. Idolatry was something that even in Egypt, we're given an indication that some of that was going on. In fact, these gods of yesterday, the gods beyond the river, anytime you see that phrase, beyond the river, it's being stated, it's talking about the Jordan River. So if you hear beyond the river, it's from the perspective of we're in the promised land and beyond the river is anything on the other side of that Jordan. Now, the other side of the Jordan was the east, but really beyond the river meant anything east and all the way down south, down into Egypt. All of that is outside of the territory of the promised land, across from that river. The gods of yesterday, these gods of Egypt, we don't necessarily know their names to the extent that we do, say, Dagon or Baal. Because that's the early part of the story that Israel had left behind. But we're given an indication that, again, some of these gods must have been a snare for the Israelites as well. Each of those plagues in Egypt in the Exodus story, there are passages that talk about this as well, that the plagues in their own ways were specifically aimed at undercutting the gods that the Egyptians thought highly of. The Egyptians, they had a god for the Nile. And so what is one of the first plague? What is the first plague? Well, the Nile turns to blood. The Egyptians, they had one of their big gods was Ra, the sun god. And what happens with that sun? Well, one of the plagues, it turns that sun to darkness. And on and on and on. The Egyptians, they had fertility gods. And then you have sickness of the animals, sickness of other things. Each of those plagues, the thing that we need to keep in mind as well, the plagues, a lot of times we think about God showing his power in those plagues to show the Egyptians his power. But also, if this is any indication here that the Israelites had served false gods in Egypt, those plagues were also assigned to Israel, that those gods that you're worshiping, they have no power here. They have no power at all. And God's the one to serve. We need to take a lesson from this, that Israel doesn't seem to have ultimately taken in their history. Just because you leave one problem doesn't mean that you've found the solution. Just because you leave a problem doesn't mean that you have found a solution. In other words, Israel, they leave the idols in Egypt. And Joshua is warning them here. He's saying, you've left the idols in Egypt and beyond the Jordan. Don't make that same mistake now that you're in the promised land. The problem wasn't that Ra and the Egyptian Nile god were just the wrong gods of many gods to serve. It's just there's one God, and any other god that you serve is going to be bad news every single time. There's a song. It reminded me of a song. I don't listen to a tremendous amount of country music, and there's a country folk artist who passed away recently, and I think it's somewhat country. His name was John Prine. And John Prine, one of his songs in one of his last albums before he passed away was a song called Crazy as a Loon. And in this song, I don't think that he was telling his story specifically, but John Prine in this song, Crazy as a Loon, he tells this story of speaking from the first person. He says that, well, he grew up in a small town. And then he wants to be a big shot star, movie star in Hollywood. He goes to Hollywood. And then things are a disaster. Things don't work out, either in his love life or just the money situation, any of those things. It doesn't work out. So he says, okay, you know what? I'm going to get away from here. It's the city. It's the town. He goes to Nashville. He goes to somewhere in the South, Nashville, Tennessee, to become a country star instead. And the same disaster repeats itself. And so he says, okay, it must just be a Nashville thing. It must just be a Hollywood thing. And so he goes to New York City to become a big shot businessman, to get a lot of loot in his lyrics. And of course, obviously, that doesn't work either. Now, never once in that song does John Prine, does he use the word idolatry. But I think as Christians, from a Christian perspective, we should recognize that's exactly what it is. Thinking that a career or more money or a love interest in any type of way can be the end-all be-all that gives us the final and full satisfaction that we want in our life. And the song is all about that. At the end of the day, the world makes you crazy as a loon is what he says. And the world will do that every single time if we're not centered on the right thing. We need to make sure that we ourselves in our lives are centered on the right thing, which is ultimately what Joshua is calling the Israelites to be centered on, which is God. He starts off saying, serve the Lord in sincerity and in truth. The other option that's out there, the only other option that's out there is serve the Lord or just serve the other idols in the world. Whether they're the idols in Israel's day or whether they're the idols that we have in our day of money and sex and power and all those types of things. We have a choice to make between those. That means for us, as we approach a new year, and as we're making sure that we ourselves are centered on the right things, that our lives are centered on God, and our actions and everything that we do is based off of the God that we follow. when we go into a new year, usually it's common for people to make resolutions. And those resolutions, usually, I think for most people, they center around things that are things like, say, losing weight or quitting smoking or I want to exercise more this year. And I think all those resolutions are good resolutions to have. But if we miss the fact that the most important thing is how we grow in our relationship to God, and how we grow as Christians in the church, then we're missing the most important way that we can center ourselves and stay firm and create a foundation for ourselves in God as we approach a new year. So it's important for us to make those resolutions that deal with our habits and eliminating bad habits out of our lives. We need to also think about how, again, am I going to grow in my relationship to God, in prayer, in the study of the Bible, in being there for friends and helping them. We need to make sure that just because we leave a bad habit in 2022, that we don't pull up a new habit, bad habit, or a new idol in 2023. Finally, we need to be able to say this, that I am resolved to focus on my house first. I am resolved to focus on my house first. That very last line of verse 15, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. In some ways, it almost sounds like Joshua is going his own way. That's not really the case at all. Although, again, there is a reality in which this is the last time that Israel, at least for a long while, is going to be together in any type of big way, because each of them is going to go off to their own inheritances, to come into their inheritances and live there. And Joshua, he's giving his farewell parting speech because he knows they're not all going to be together in that type of way. Again, what Joshua is doing is he's recognizing that the one thing that I know that I can influence, the one thing that I know that I can effectively lead is myself and my family. So we need to keep this in mind for ourselves. We need to always start with ourselves and our household before we try to change the world. We need to start with ourselves and our household before we try to change the world. There's a famous Leo Tolstoy quote. He was a famous Russian writer. Leo Tolstoy said this. He said, everyone thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing themselves. In other words, we've all met this type of person, someone who their whole life is just filled with gripes and complaints about everything else around them, about how bad the world is, how bad people are, and how if they just listened to all of their solutions, well, the world would be a better place. But then that type of person, as you're listening to them, you're thinking, man, your life's kind of a disaster itself. There's all kinds of things going on in your life that, even if you did have good solutions, no one would listen to you in the first place because they don't see how that's actually working out in your life at all. And second of all, there's another big problem. You can talk about how the world should adopt all these solutions, but oftentimes, probably almost every single time, our best efforts are going to be directed at making sure that we're doing the right things and our family, the people that we have the greatest influence over, are doing what they need to be doing. Because the further that we think of in our lives, there's ourselves, there's our family, we have friends, there's acquaintances, there's people that we've never, ever met. The further that we go outside of the people that we know, the less influence we always have. We're always going to have less influence, and that's obvious, over people that we don't know. People that you've met just once or twice, you have a little bit more influence, but really not much. Friends, we might have friends. There might be ways that we would like to influence our friends more, but we realize, again, we have a limited amount of power in getting our friends to do what we think that they should do in any situation. And even family, even for someone like Joshua, for her husbands or fathers that lead in the household. Being a leader doesn't mean that every single person, every single circumstance is going to follow or listen. The first place we always start is with ourself. It's where Joshua starts, as for me, before he even gets to my house, as for me, and for my house, we will serve the Lord. The most control we have, if we look at our lives, is the one person that we can always 100% change is ourselves. This is the ironic thing about it all. Usually, it's the people that we have less control over that we tend to be more critical of or judgmental of, or it's easy for us to see the faults or the problems in everybody else that we have no control over and changing in any type of way. But then when it comes to ourselves, we're even easier on ourselves than we might be on our family members, which is ironic because we're the person that needs some of that critical judgment against ourselves, because we're the people that can actually change if we recognize that, hey, there are these things in my life that I shouldn't be doing. I need to change these in some type of way. And once we do that, we can say, as for me and for my house, we can work out from there. I've gotten my ducks in a row. I'm working on my ducks, getting them in a row. My family, whether as a father or a husband, or whether as a wife or a mother, a brother or a sister, a child, in each of our ways, we can have an impact on our house and helping them to serve the Lord and helping them to follow the Lord. From there, we can make a difference in our church when we have our act together, when we are leading or influencing and helping our household. We can make a difference in the church, and from there, we can even make a difference in the world. But it always starts out with being able to resolve to focus on myself and my house first. Throughout the Bible, we're reminded that Jesus and God not only loved us and loved his people, but that the reason that Jesus Christ died was so that he could give us a new start, a blank slate, a new beginning. Because what we had done up to that point, we'd really marred what God had intended us for, being creatures made in his image to show his glory into the world. But he forgave us of our sins, redeemed us from our sins, as TJ mentioned, with that one final sacrifice to fully cleanse us, to become the people that we needed to be. As we begin a new year in 2023, we might realize that whether we have been Christians or whether we haven't been Christians before, there are still changes that we need to make. And through the power of God, we are able to do that. If you know that in your life you need to make a change, whether that's to become a Christian for the very first time, to become washed anew, washed in his blood, to come out of that free with a blank slate, clean, and able to offer yourself as a living sacrifice, or if you know that in your life there are changes that you need to make, that you haven't as a Christian, you need the prayers of the congregation. If you have any need, please let that be known as we stand and as we sing.